This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
Rabble.ca.
Wings thanks Rabble Podcast Network for carrying our programs and urges listeners to contribute to their fundraiser. Please visit rabble.ca/donate today. Today on Wings, we hear women members of the UK Parliament from both sides of the so-called Brexit referendum.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
One of many strange things about the UK's Brexit referendum is that opinions on whether to leave the European Union did not follow political party lines. Some media traced the decision to hold the referendum to a split between Conservative Prime Minister David Cameron and MPs from his own party who wanted out. But the Labour Party, too, was divided. Party leader Jeremy Corbyn spoke for the stay side, but Labour Member of Parliament Gisela Stewart chaired the Vote Leave campaign. Bonnie Soans of London-based Women's Parliamentary Radio interviewed Gisela Stewart shortly after the referendum. In this program, I'll be interrupting her interviews from time to time with extra info for listeners outside the UK.
Order, order.
Gisela Stewart, MP for Birmingham Edgbaston.
Gisela, thank you very much indeed for talking to Women's Parliamentary Radio, which you co-chair. The first thing I should say is congratulations to you. You chaired the Vote Leave, and Vote Leave won the Brexit vote.
Indeed, but you will have noticed that there's very little jubilation on our side, because it's a very difficult decision which we've put to the electorate. In a sense, we almost asked them to do our job for us. And, I mean, I personally regretted that Cameron put the referendum on that kind of basis, because we said to the voters, in or out, but nobody on a government place offered them what the options were. You know, we should have had referenda on the treaties, you know, Lisbon, Maastricht. But given that we had it, I felt very strongly that we should leave and therefore join the cross-party grouping. And when we got designation from the Electoral Commission, I did my best that we get a leave vote.
Going back a few seconds, you heard Gisela Stewart say there should have been referenda on the treaties Lisbon-Maastricht. The Maastricht Treaty, completed in 1992, was the one that paved the way for Europe to have a single currency, which Britain has never joined. They are still using pounds alongside of euros. The Lisbon Treaty, completed in 2007, abolished national vetoes over European Parliament decisions and created a European constitution and a European diplomatic corps. The woman you are listening to, Labour Member of Parliament Gisela Stewart, probably knows that constitution as well as anyone in the world. She was deeply involved in the convention that drew up the constitution and one of only 13 members of its steering committee. When the draft constitution came out, she accused that it had been drawn up by, quote, a self-selected group of the European political elite, who were determined to force more European integration. Again, Bonnie Soans.
And you chaired the Vote Leave campaign. Wasn't that a difficult decision as a Labour MP standing next to prominent Tories?
I sort of chaired the board, which made sort of all the financial decisions and things. And then on the campaign board, I co-convened that with Michael Gove. The really important thing was that I think we all realised that this was a decision which went beyond party politics.
You didn't agonise over any of that, deciding to go into the Vote Leave camp, despite what you acknowledge as the simplicity of the referendum question, leave or remain, and becoming chair.
I think it's because I was so convinced, and still am convinced, that the one thing which wasn't on the ballot paper was the status quo. If I'd thought that if we remained, things would just go on as they do, I probably would have felt less strongly that I had to do something. But the unresolved question of the euro, the one event within the European architecture, which no longer allowed people to say, well, I'm sort of half in, half out. The euro requires deeper integration. It's not working.
We're not in the euro.
No, but because we are kind of almost holding them back. And also, if you are one out of 28, then the core group will go on making decisions in their interest and not yours. So we ended up being tied into something that actually would not make decisions in our interest.
And you did sit on one of the European bodies that drafted the legislation. Was that what made you a Brexiteer?
It did in many ways. I spent 15 months being one of 13 people who were the drafting body of the new European Constitution.
On the European Council?
It was called the Convention on the Future of Europe, and we were charged with drafting a constitution. And what happened was, A, during that process, all the stuff which I thought would make for greater democratic accountability and transparency sort of kept being negotiated away. Then it was put in a referendum to the French and the Dutch people, who, when they said no, they simply rehashed the same thing, called it the Lisbon Treaty, and imposed it anyway. So I kind of became convinced that there was a establishment force that was incapable of changing, and the only thing it was good at was overcoming the democratic will.
In a nutshell, why did you want to Brexit? And do you still have the same opinion, given the chaos that's resulted since Thursday's vote? We're now at Monday. 17 members of your own shadow cabinet in Labour have resigned. The stock markets are falling to their lowest since 1985, despite the fact that George Osborne gave a reassuring speech to the city today. It's chaos.
But what that is, it's a reflection of how our democratic institutions are failing to function properly in a modern world. You know, I always see my job as being the mediator between mob rule on the one hand and bureaucratic tyranny on the other. That's the job of political parties, that's the job of parliament. You bring people's voices together, you then see what's possible, you seek a mandate. All those things are breaking down, you know. We have the hysteria on Twitter and Facebook, which seems to be by some people be regarded as more important than informed discussion. We have a fracture in the political parties, which is not along ideological lines, but it's between members and MPs, you know. The classic one today with what's happening in the Labour Party, that deep fracture. So what the referendum did, it highlighted some deep fissures in the system rather than have created them.
Tony Blair said that if this referendum, the Brexit referendum in the UK, had been held in any other of the 28 European states, they would have also voted to leave. Do you agree with that?
There is an extraordinary revolt almost against a bureaucratic structure that is not responsive. And I always call it almost the tale of two unions. The United Kingdom Union is one that over 300 years had continuously adapted, reflected the wishes of the people it represented, and a European Union that just kept growing without being responsive to the needs of its members. And what I just find so unbelievable is that, you know, I now get hate mail because I supported the ability of people to have their voice heard. 17 million of them made a decision. And there's another group out there who seem to think that this is the end of the world as we know it. Get a grip. Stop having this nervous breakdown. It's democracy at work. It's an enormous opportunity. And we have to step up to the plate and implement it.
Did voters in the UK really know what they might gain or lose by leaving the European Union? Leave campaign materials included a much criticized appeal to people's fears about the decline of their National Health Service. A sign on a huge red bus, for instance, read, quote, "We send the EU £350 million a week. Let's fund our NHS instead. Let's take back control." Immediately after the vote, the leader of the UK Independence Party, who is also a disgruntled member of the European Parliament, told media that figure was just one of many things the UK could do with the money saved, not an immediate promise. Bonnie Soane's carefully broached the issue with the chair of the Leave campaign, Gisela Stewart.
Mervyn King has said today that it was a disappointing and depressing campaign. He and others are also tipping you to be one of the Brexit negotiators in what they think will be is Michael Gove's team. Was it depressing and disappointing?
Well, it was because it was the nature of the question.
So it was a scurrilous campaign?
No, you see, what happens is facts about the future are hard to come by. And we, rather than saying, how do we want to be governed? And given that even this place has since 2010 not had debates on European Council meetings. We have not had debates on agriculture. We have not had debates on fisheries. So even the political elites actually are amazingly ill-educated about what the European Union does. The disconnect between these institutions is horrendous. So then we were going to a public who we had to explain in terms they could relate to of what the differences are. So I was very careful when it came about taking control of immigration policy, that I thought if you had no control over that, you couldn't plan public services. You simply can't. Now, whatever the numbers are, you need to have a way in which you can decide on them. Now, there was all sorts of other stuff going on at the periphery. But all sides, ended up having to use symbols almost. But
so the figure on your battle bus was a symbol?
No, it showed what the total was over which you could take control to make the decision making. You know, that is the total. You then can go on and say, oh, but we get some of it back, to which I say, yeah, but you get it back with conditions attached. And then they say, oh,
so you stick to the 350 million?
I can justify the figure. I can explain it. With all those things, I can explain where they come from.
Do you agree that there is no plan, that you hadn't expected to win? The opinion polls, even up 10 o'clock, had put you slightly behind, 4 points behind, instead you were 4 points, that there was no plan for the Brexiteers, of which you chaired. You are a leading member. You should have had a plan.
I'm not the government, not even the alternative government. I chaired an organisation that campaigned for a leave vote. A government's responsibility, even when it goes into a general election, is it takes the major parties' manifestos and works out a plan of what the alternatives are. We had a government that called a referendum at choice, and it was so certain that it would win that it didn't even think it had to think about what it itself needed to do. Now, we were quite clear on one or two things where the next steps would be, and they'd be possible. But, you know, I'm a Labour backbencher. I'm not the alternative government. And given that the Prime Minister put that question to the people, I think the EU is a busted flush. I think the euro is not working. I think we're better off out.
But if your only regret is the wording of the question and the simplicity of the wording of the question on the referendum paper, should you have accepted responsibility to get a different wording?
No, I couldn't have done that. The Tory majority.
Have you ever thought of defecting?
This is one of those questions which started to appear in about 2005 when I almost did get thrown out of the Labour Party because I was campaigning for a referendum on the Constitution. I've been for the best part of 20 years a Labour MP. My definition of what the Labour Party is as valid as yours or anybody else's out there. And this notion that whenever you disagree with someone, you say, well, why don't you go to the other lot? It's just kind of lazy abuse, really. So, again, when you get this criticism of that, you know, I as a Labour MP have just betrayed the interests of all those Labour people, because if there's a recession, they'll be hit hardest, to which I say, look, folks, they voted Leave because they looked at their lives, and when they were threatened by the Chancellor that things will only get worse, they said, you know what, do you really think it can get much worse?
So, and do you have empathy with that, with the migration argument, that people really are suffering because there's unfair competition from migrant labour?
Yeah, they feel left behind, and they felt there was a Labour Party that was no longer speaking for them. So in answer, am I defecting? I'm not going to make life as easy as that for you, no.
You've clearly worked on the legislation. You know about the Constitution. Would you accept a role as a negotiator to leave Europe?
Ask me again when I'm actually being asked. The most immediate thing is I just wish this hysteria and public nervous breakdown just needs to calm down, because people are creating a crisis. You know, 3 days after the referendum, you get people going on about saying that, you know, our future is ruined, my children's future is ruined. And you can say, hold on, you know, just wake up. Nothing has as yet happened. We have had a democratic decision. So I just wish things calmed down a bit.
Did you celebrate on the night?
No, I didn't. I was up all night and had to do the declaration in Manchester at about 4:30 and then came down here. So my celebration was actually getting more than 4 hours sleep.
Geesla Stewart, thank you very much indeed for talking to Women's Parliamentary Radio today about Brexit, your role, and thank you sincerely for your support of us.
Pleasure. Thank you very much.
On Wings, you're listening to excerpts from Women's Parliamentary Radio. Next, Bonnie Soans interviews Lauralee Jane Burt, Baroness of Solihull, who was a Member of Parliament for the Liberal Democratic Party before elevation to the House of Lords. The question, again, is Brexit.
Order. Baroness Burt of Solihull, and I'd also speak for the Liberal Democrat Party for business, innovation and skills.
Your reaction, Lauralee, to today's events, which seem chaotic to say the least. Stock markets are falling, lowest since 1985.
Yes, well, I just feel like so many of my colleagues, just really gutted, because we know that it's going to be an uphill struggle from here on in. But having said that, you know, arrangements have been made to come into effect should the worst happen. And the worst has happened. The worst continues to happen as well with the situation relating to the markets. But we still are a very business-orientated country. Britain is open for business. And who knows? There may be opportunities for a lot of businesses to actually benefit in different ways from this result.
Are you one person who supports a second referendum? And do you think we should join the European Economic Area and EFTA so that we can have trade deals in place? They say it takes years to renegotiate one trade deal, let alone 50, and we don't have trade negotiators anymore.
And we don't have years either. That's the other problem. Yes, I think the faster we can get access to the free market, the better. The problem is that the price, I can't see any agreement in the world at the moment where the price isn't free movement of labour. So that negates the whole reason for having the referendum in the first place. There's no deal that's better than the deal that we've just walked away from. But the way I'm feeling about it at the moment is that any deal which gives us access back to the free trade area has got to be something that we should seriously consider.
And Boris has written a Telegraph column today where he seems to backtrack, where he says we still want to be a member of Europe, yeah, and that he may even accept free movement of people and migration for the benefit of joining the European Economic Area. Do you think that the voters will see that as duplicity?
Well, yeah, it is duplicity, no question or doubt about it. However, we have to be realistic about what our prospects are now. It makes me so angry to think that what it's his fault to a large degree that we are in this situation. You know, if he's now going to give up everything that he said, you know, I know that the inside exaggerated somewhat, but that's nothing to what the outside did. And now they're all having to backtrack if we're going to have our economic situation restored.
Should there be a second referendum?
Well, I'd love to see one, but we've had a democratic vote. People have voted to leave, but by a very small margin. And so I don't know what the answer is to that. If it were possible, then I would certainly do so. Our leader for the Liberal Democrats, Tim Farron, has said that this is going to be a major plank of our manifesto for the next general election, is to negotiate full membership back into the European Union.
And of course, we might have another general election this year or early next,
yeah,
if a new leader of the Tory party takes over and wants a mandate from the people. But you're close to business throughout your career in Parliament and now in the Lords. You've championed business, particularly small business, business for women. You've spoken to Women's Parliamentary Radio often, for which I thank you. But what are business leaders saying to you?
It's not repeatable. It's really not repeatable. There's a lot of anxiety. I think that because they're British businesses, they will knuckle under and they will do whatever needs to be done in order to enable their interests, their business interests, to prosper. We find ourselves in uncharted territory, and who knows what's going to happen next. Certainly they don't. A colleague of mine has said that companies throughout the country have been putting into practice their emergency plans, but I would counsel business to keep calm. Just see how things settle down and don't take any severe steps right now, because who knows what's going to happen in the future.
Lawley Bert, thank you very much indeed for talking to Women's Parliamentary Radio. On a scale to 1 to 10, how do you rate today's crisis?
10!
Thank you.
2 weeks after the Brexit referendum and the fissuring of the Labour and the Conservative parties, the Liberal Democrats claim to have already gained 15,000 new members. Across the UK, the Brexit vote won by just 52%, with 72% of eligible voters participating. But the United Kingdom was disunited on the issue. Only England and Wales had majorities choosing leave. Northern Ireland voted 56% to remain, as leaving would threaten their economic integration with Ireland to the south. Scottish voters chose remain by 62%, and they are discussing mounting another referendum to leave the UK and stay in Europe. 2 years ago, a Scottish independence vote lost by 55%. In an effort to keep Scots happy, the UK has been devolving more powers to the Scottish National Parliament. One of those powers is the right to control their own legislation on abortion. An opponent of that item was newly elected Labour MP Jo Cox. Here she speaks to Bonnie Soans.
You were one of a number of Labour women who raised concerns about the Scottish devolution bill and abortion. Why?
Against advice, and looks like without consultation, the government have decided to devolve decision-making over abortion to the Scottish Parliament. I was raising my concern that actually I think abortion rights and the right to choose for women, it should be universal and should be available for all women, whether you live in Scotland or in England. Or Northern Ireland, actually. And I worry that that boundary now might lead to a change in legislation. The Secretary of State for Scotland claimed to have consulted women's groups in Scotland, but I've not heard of any that have been consulted. So I think there are real issues here that we might see women in Scotland would have different rights to women in England, and we already have this disparity about women in Northern Ireland. That really concerns me. I think this is a right that's been hard fought for and should be universal to all women in the United Kingdom. I think actually these discussions should be held UK-wide, and these rights have been hard fought for and should be universal wherever you live in the United Kingdom.
One more question, and thank you for giving your time generously. Twitter, does it concern you? Are you sceptical about Twitter? Are you nervous about it?
I think it's a great way of communicating quickly to your constituency, to members of the press, to the public generally about what's going on in this place. And, you know, clearly it's a fun and engaging thing to do anyway for a lot of people. So, I think it's fundamentally a good thing. But I think that my worry is that it has unleashed a hostility.
Misogyny.
Really bad misogyny. That we have to be mindful of how do we control that, because it's hurtful, it's unacceptable, and it's aggressive. And sometimes it's actually against the law. So, and in fact, on that issue, lots of Labour men and women members of Parliament have just taken part in a photo call here in Parliament to say it is unacceptable for women MPs to be trolled online and accused of all sorts of manner of horrific things, and also subject to really, really hateful messages.
Jo Cox was also one of the stronger advocates of remaining in the European Union. She represented a riding that includes many immigrants and spoke out firmly on their behalf.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's a great privilege to be called to make my maiden speech in this most important of debates, and I congratulate many others who've made outstanding maiden speeches today as well. Batley and Spen is a gathering of typically independent, no-nonsense, proud Yorkshire towns and villages. Our communities have been deeply enhanced by immigration, be it Irish Catholics across the constituency or Muslims from Indian Gujarat or Pakistan, principally from Kashmir. And whilst we celebrate our diversity, the thing that surprises me time and time again as I travel around the constituency is that we are far more united and have far more in common than that which divides us. I look forward to representing the great people of Batley and Spen here over the next 5 years. Thank you.
Shortly before the Brexit referendum, Cox was brutally murdered in public by a man with ties to the American Nazi movement. The phrase "more in common" was picked up as a hashtag and a memorial to Jo Cox in the UK Parliament and in parliaments around the world.
Susan Cramer, Baroness Cramer. It was just an extraordinary moment in the House of Lords. So many people standing to remember Jo Cox, recognising that the best honour to her is to achieve the inclusiveness, the open-heartedness, the generosity of spirit that drove her onwards. And even some rebukes, I think, to the kind of poison that has seeped into politics and that her husband described as taking her life. I mean, I was an MP myself, and, you know, like every single MP, you got death threats, you got challenges, and I think all of us basically brushed them aside and just assumed they would never turn into anything real. And you know, from now on we have to take them all seriously. And it also means that we then ask the question, what drives someone? What gives them the feeling that it is legitimate to behave in this way? And have we in our conversation contributed towards that sense of legitimacy? And that's what I mean, in a sense, by tackling the lack of generosity and the anger.
Anushka Astana is a political editor for The Guardian newspaper.
Anushka, thank you for talking to Women's Parliamentary Radio here today in the Commons on such a sad day. Have you ever seen such emotion expressed in the chamber before?
I personally never have. I mean, it must be very rare to see MPs having to grip hold of each other, hold hands, hold each other's shoulders as they try to speak, people with tears running down their faces. I thought it was a really poignant moment when Rachel Reeves, a close friend of Joe Cox's, someone who has two young children herself, broke down in tears at the end of what was really a very beautiful tribute.
Yes, Rachel Reeves said you can replace the MP that Joe represented for her constituency, but you'd never replace the mother of her children.
No, and that was a really sad moment, this idea that Joe is irreplaceable. You've seen this outpouring of love towards her. I was lucky enough to know her briefly, both as an MP and before she became an MP, and she really did light up Parliament. She was one of those MPs who had a certain type of spirit and passion and activism that I think really, really touched everyone around her, and we can really see that as a result of those tributes that poured out today.
And she wanted action. She didn't just wasn't a soft MP, she wanted action, something Stephen Kinnock spoke about.
Yeah, exactly. People were saying this very simple thing, that it wasn't about words for Joe, it was about what do you actually do. She wanted to do a few very important things while she was here. I spoke to her quite recently about two of her priorities. One was to help people fleeing from the war-torn country of Syria, but the other one that I really wanted us at The Guardian to do a lot on, was about the idea that she'd heard these tragic stories of loneliness in her own constituency, and she wanted to actually launch a cross-party, that was always her way, cross-party campaign, commission even, to try and tackle that epidemic.
And will it represent a seismic change in politics, as the Reverend Rose Huston said?
Well, I thought it was interesting to hear Jeremy Corbyn, the Labour leader, call for a kinder and gentler type of politics. Whether these things actually come to fruition, you never know. Days after we all said that there might be a change of tone in the referendum campaign, some would argue that hasn't happened. But I do think that Joe Cox has touched Parliament, and touched far beyond Parliament, and that is something that will not be forgotten. This week, in her name, there's going to be events all over the world, in fact, under three words, more in common. And that's all about her maiden speech that she made here, which was saying, look, there is more that unites us in society than divides us.
Anushka, thank you very much. And you're going to chair a European referendum debate tonight. Will Joe's death have changed the referendum and the terms by which various camps are engaging with one another?
Well, I think to some extent people don't want the memories of Jo or the tributes that will go out to her on Wednesday to be specifically about the referendum, but you can't take away the message that she was talking about when she was campaigning very vigorously to remain in the EU, and that was of a world in which people are tolerant, in which they work together, and in which they are united rather than divided.
Anushka, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
Anushka Astana is a political editor for The Guardian newspaper. To hear this and other Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org or check our page at facebook.com/wingsradio. Thank you to all our supporters, including your local community radio stations, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the book Women and the Gift Economy. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. I'm Wings series producer Frieda Werten. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.